before we get to all the sports, and there's a lot of sports to discuss, Joe Shane deserves to win an Emmy. Did I break Citi Field etiquette last night? And the New York Yankees continue to struggle. Before we get to all of that, if you like the summer, what the hell is wrong with you? This weather, this humidity, the disgustingness, the sweatiness. What's wrong with you people that everybody loves the summer? The summer sucks. And if you don't believe me, step outside.
It's just a little heat.
A little heat.
It's all good. Dude. I actually think it's partly responsible for the Yankee swoon.
They played in a dome yesterday.
It doesn't matter. I got to find some excuse. There's got to be something. It's too hot outside.
Dude, I have come to a conclusion I don't want to come to. It's not a conclusion I come to very often. I don't like to throw around what I'm about to say. And many of you out there may have already come to this conclusion. But for me, July 9th, 2024 was the moment where I definitively could say that Carlos Rodon cannot pitch in New York City.
What do you
and
mean?
He can't pitch here.
You mean this is a pressure thing? This is like Joey Gallo not being able to hit in New York City.
This is Joey Gallo. This is Ed Whitson. There's a long list of guys who just can't play here. By the way, Tiki, you can reveal some names because I'm sure there are guys you played with that you know couldn't play here.
Right. But I also don't think that Carlos Rodon is affected by the pressure of being in New York.
Completely disagree with you.
But there's no evidence of that. The fact that he can't place his fastball, or at least there's no movement on his fastball, so when he does, it just kind of floats right in the middle of the plate. And yeah, there's some velocity, but you're a major leaguer. You can hit fastballs. And so to me, I think he's just misguided in how he's pitching. Like, he's a power pitcher. We know what he was brought here for. It's the reason he got paid. Because if you can rear back and hit 98 and it's got some movement on it, there's not a lot of guys that are going to hit home runs off of you. That's what he made his wares on. That's what he got paid to come here to do. And for whatever reason, maybe it's the sicky stuff or lack thereof. I've been on this for 2 weeks now. He can't get movement on his fastball. And so guys just sit there and tee off on it. It happens every single one of his starts. The rest of the start is okay. Now, he only went four innings.
Why
but
is
still.
That? But the why is the rest of his starts okay?
Because he starts figuring out how to pitch.
Or the pressure's off. Or he's buried his team down 4-1, and it's like, oh, gee, I can relax. Like, there is evidence, and I'll lay it out for you right now. And again, I hate doing this because there have been many times where guys have come here, they have struggled, and this is a natural debate we have on WFAN and we have on Sports Talk Radio, which is that guy can't play here. I remember doing it over Sonny Gray. Mm-hmm. I remember doing it over Jay Bruce when he was a Met. Like, this is a very common, can you handle New York discussion? And I swear to you, more times than not, I'm on the side of the athlete of, well, there are reasons why a guy is struggling. But here's the evidence, and I want to lay it out to you on why I am convinced.
Maybe you can convince me.
Okay. I think that, A, he has been automatically struggling in shutdown innings. In the innings where it's a little bit more important because your team either just gave you a run, like last night with Gleyber Torres, or your team just gave you a lead, or it's the first inning and it's, hey, let me take a deep breath and get through this first inning like a few weeks ago against Toronto. And then it's like once the pressure's off, once the lead is gone, once I'm down by 4 or 5 runs, he can relax. He can take it easy. So number one, his complete ineffectiveness early in games and in shutdown innings. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two. And this goes back to his days in San Francisco. There is a viral video from his days in San Francisco in which he was so angry and so pissed off as he walked into the dugout, he kicked, I think, a bat. And the bat, like he's a soccer player, went right into the body of Tyro Estrada. And Wilmer Flores, the former Met legend, came over and was like, dude, what the hell's going on?
All right, punch a cooler.
We saw him last night losing his cool. We saw him last year and this year acting like a big giant baby when Aaron Boone wants to take him out of a game. We saw him doing the kiss a year ago in Anaheim to Yankee fans. We saw him crying in a dugout a week ago.
First of all, the blowing a kiss thing was to a specific fan who was trolling him and he just wanted him to have it.
But he reacted.
Well, he reacted, and that's stupid because you can't let your emotions get the best of you. But what you just said proves knows that it's not New York. He acted this way in Chicago. He acted this way when he was in San Francisco. Like, he is just an emotional dude.
But you know what the difference is? You're right. The way he's acting is the same. But sometimes when you feel the heat and you feel the pressure and you feel the contract and you feel the eyeballs and you feel the booze, it's different. That kind of stuff doesn't work as well when you're doing it in New York City and all eyes are on you.
Well, it doesn't work when you're not good, right? You can be as big a jerk as you want.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good, people are still going to love you.
Sure.
That's the reality of performance, of entertainment. And sports in particular. And so I think Carlos Rodon has a dependency issue. He has a dependency to when he gets in these moments where he thinks he can just throw the ball past guys. And he just can't. It happens every game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment in every game where he does the exact same thing. So to me, is this a pitching coach issue? Is this a catcher issue? But every single game, there's one or two throws or two at-bats where he just loses it.
Yeah.
And then he stabilizes.
Exactly. Exactly. And you just laid out all the possibilities of what it is, but you're leaving one out.
It's a
pressure issue. He reeks of a guy that just can't deal with the pressures and the burden of the contract, of the pinstripes, of the city. And look, he wouldn't be the first, and he won't be the last. Like, it's happened before.
I know what you're saying, and the evidence actually backs you up.
Thank you.
Right? It just says that you are correct. But, I mean, when Carlos Rodon first got here, BT and I had him on the show. It was awesome. Like, we just got him the first day he was here. And after that conversation, I remember saying, this dude is going to be awesome for New York.
Agreed with you. I heard the interview. I heard what he said in press conferences. And everything he said, whether it was you with you and BT, whether it was after he got injured and said, October is the only thing that matters, he reeked of a guy who could play here.
Yes.
And guess what? Guess what? We were all wrong.
Well, I think it hasn't been ideal. Obviously, last year, he was hurt. And then he struggled, and then he was fighting to maybe live up to the contract a year ago. And that's why he probably was pitching when he was not fully 100%. This year, there was no excuse. And by the way, when he started the season, we said, this is exactly what you paid for, right? But then all of a sudden, something happened. Something happened right around that Edwin Diaz sticky stuff situation where the Yankee pitchers, all of them, and others around the league, just started to lose control. They started to lose some dominance. Now, maybe it is the crackdown on sticky stuff, or you're just being smart. Maybe it is the summer heat, right? It's hot as hell here in New York, and emotionally that affects you. And go work out outside and tell me how you emotionally feel when you're done. Now, I'm not making these excuses, but I'm just trying to find a reason why the guy who we saw at the beginning of the season now all of a sudden has no movement on his fastball, which still has velocity, but it's not doing anything. It's basically just sitting on a tee for some of these guys.
I'll give you the reason, because I appreciate we're trying to get the answer here. We're trying to ask questions. So let's look back now at the last five starts, because that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
These are five horrendous starts in a row, and
terrible.
You're going to notice something, and you're going to say it's a coincidence, and I'm going to say it's backing me up that he can't deal with the pressure.
Okay.
His last really good start was against the Kansas City Royals. Mm-hmm. Remember when the Yankees were rolling? They won the first three games of that series in the middle of June. Well, Carlos Rodon pitched seven innings. He allowed one run. He was utterly brilliant. The next start that he made, the one that began all of this, was in Boston against the Red Sox. You know what happens in Boston when you face the Red Sox?
What?
Pressure.
Well,
you walk in a Fenway Park with the pinstripes on you, there's a different kind of pressure. And that game where he gave up three runs in the first inning, then the Yankees answered and scored two runs. And it's like, they're back in the game.
And
you know how he responded? He gave up two more runs.
Right, but the same thing happened in this game. Let's not forget the Yankees got within a run.
I understand. I get you. Okay, and he was out of the game after 4 innings.
Of course, he was out of the game at that point.
But in this particular game, the beginning of the stretch, stay with me on this because it's going to prove my point. It's easy. It started when the pressure began. They go to Boston. Everything's fine. He gives up three runs in the first inning. He gives up two runs in the second inning.
Yeah.
He loses. And since that moment, that innocuous game in Boston, that was sign number one that Carlos Rodon can't wear the pinstripes.
Hmm.
He can't carry the heat. And from that moment on, That's the line of demarcation. His next start was against Atlanta. He gave up 8 runs in 3 2/3 innings. His next start was against Toronto. He got chased, got bombed in the first inning. That's when he settled down. Great. Mm-hmm. He settled down. The game was out of hand. They were getting their ass kicked. And that's what continued the snowball effect. So, look, you could argue it's a coincidence, but here are the facts. This all started when the pressure started to build.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of a guy that can't play here.
Well, yeah, but you can also learn how to play here. And Carlos Rodon, in my mind, has the mentality to not care. You know what I mean? He feels like that kind of player that can easily block out noise, and because he's not mean, but he has this like aggressiveness about him that just basically says, screw what you're saying, I'm just going to go do my job. And I feel like he does that. It's just one or two at-bats. It happens every game. So to me, that's not he's caving to the pressure. It's he's not confident on how to get certain guys out. And I don't know where that come from. Is it preparation? Is it a lack of having, you know, good enough grip on a ball so it's not the spin rate is down? We actually should look at his spin rate. Mm. Look at the difference between what his spin rate was at the beginning of the season when he was pretty nasty to what it is now, where it seems flat, all of these fastballs, despite the velocity. So for me, it's not a pressure situation that's causing him to fail. It's an execution issue that's causing him to fail. Because, like, You saw it last night. He gives up the home run in the first inning, and all of a sudden it's like, all right, he looks good. If you delete that first inning, Carlos Rodon was pretty good.
You can't delete
the first inning, but
because the first inning also removes that kind of pressure. You had a 1-0
lead. Right. You're not wrong. And again, I will say this 15 times a day. You are not wrong. Like if I was a lay follower of baseball or the Yankees, and you said that to me, it makes sense. Mm. It would make sense to me. But knowing who Carlos Rodon is and knowing what he's about, I can't make that assumption. To me, it's just I feel like he's lost in certain moments. Not he can't play in New York. It's just certain moments get away from him, and it pisses him off, and he has to emotionally stabilize himself, which, by the way, he does.
If you want to give him credit for getting through the second, third, and fourth inning so they didn't have to go to the bullpen in the first inning, great. I guess you give him credit. He settled down and won four.
Last year, there was a – when was that? What was the game that he didn't get out? Remember?
It was his last start of last year.
Right. He didn't get out of the – didn't get recorded out.
Yeah, but that can't be the bar.
No.
The bar can't be, hey, he recorded an out. Look, a lot of guys have come here with big contracts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys have come here and have not been as good as maybe we thought they were. And in a lot of cases, sometimes it's just you bought a guy past 30. And they didn't succeed here. And sometimes there are reasons for why you don't succeed here. I've never been a believer that the only reason a free agent won't succeed here is the pressure of New York.
Yeah.
But to me, watching him, and this is not something I came to the conclusion on 3 starts ago. Maybe a lot of you guys did. And if that's the case, I'm late to the party. What do you want me to tell you? In fact, I think I remember defending him in the start he made against Boston. But then it starts to build. Then you see the way he struggled against Atlanta and the way he got pounded in the first inning. Or not pounded, he had a lot of bad luck against the Blue Jays in the first inning. And you see what happened last night against Tampa. And you see the way he acts. Like, sometimes the way you act says a lot about you. He's given you tears. He's given you anger. It's like he's trying to show you every single emotion show how mad he is.
But to me, that's frustration. That's not lack of... That's frustration. Like, I don't know what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure this out. No matter what I'm trying to do, and I'm rearing back and I'm throwing it as hard as I can, nothing is working. To me, when you start crying, it's frustration. That happened to me. I told you, you've heard the story of the Philadelphia game in 2000. I forget what year it was. It was the end of the season. We had to win it to get in the playoffs, and I fumbled 3 times.
Mm.
But I also rushed for 200 yards. Right. So it was like this frustrating, like, we're so good and we should be destroying them, but I keep screwing it up type of thing. And after that, I cried. Right, and it's an overwhelming of emotion because he's both really good, but also terrible.
It's
you're confused.
I get it. I'm not ripping him for crying. I wasn't bothered when he cried. It's the fact he's giving you everything, whether it's throwing an iPad, whether it's being mean and disrespectful to the manager, whether it's being stupefied, he's being taken out of a game. He's giving you everything, every single emotion. And I watch him, and here's the problem. I watch him and I see a guy that can handle New York City. I don't think he can. And Brian Cashman, to his credit, has always been honest about this. Years ago, he came out and admitted to all of us, Sonny Gray can't pitch in New York, right, and I'm going to trade him. And he did. And look, there's a debate on if it was New York or if it was pitch selection. Either way, what happens to Sonny Gray when he leaves New York?
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, but
the Yankees
wasn't
are
that
stuck.
Also something to do with his pitch coach? And,
yes.
Right?
And that's the debate on it.
Like,
absolutely.
Like, you can only throw this.
Yes.
And he's like, I don't really want to throw that ball.
Hey, Teak, my opinion, right. I'm only speaking for myself, I've never was convinced Sonny Gray couldn't pitch in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a believer in that. So I'm not quick to kind of use that excuse to explain why a player is struggling. I'm just using my eyes and my brain to watch what's going on. And honestly, one of the things that's always pissed me off as a baseball fan is the guy who has the inability to get the shutdown inning. The guy who has the inability in that inning that's just a little bit bigger than others to get those big outs. It's part of why I hated Tom Glavine when he was a Met.
Right,
he never did it.
You
right?
got to be able, if your team gives you an advantage, you got to be able to keep it.
No doubt.
And what you're saying, and this is why I agree with you, but I don't believe you. This is why this is why Carlos Rodon feels like he can't play in these pressure situations. I don't think that has anything to do with New York, by the way. I think it may be just pressure situations. In these pressure moments against in must-win type situations, he always gives up the big hit. Always.
Is this a New York issue facing Carlos Rodon? Is it something else? Plus, I have been very loyal in remaining not overly worried about the New York Yankees. They are now 6-17. when does the calmer Yankee fan start to panic and say, uh-oh,
yeah,
maybe we're wrong?
They're another game closer.
We'll get to it coming up, 888-808-1019. Plus, why did Saquon Barkley agree to have a private conversation with Joe Shane, allowed to be aired on TV, and something we will replay coming up at around 3 o'clock. We'll try to figure it all out, Evan and Tiki. Tell you, I had not heard about this, but I just read something fascinating about Aaron Judge and his free agency from a year and a half ago. I know it's been a year and a half, but I had never heard this one. Aaron Judge did an interview last night with the Tampa Bay Tribune and confirmed that the Tampa Bay Rays made a very aggressive offer
for Tampa.
Well, I mean, aggressive offer in general.
Aaron Judge.
They tried to sign Aaron Judge, the Tampa Bay Rays. This is a quote from Aaron Judge. It was a very respectful offer, and I appreciated that they reached out and that they thought enough of me to do that. And I respect their team. I respect what they built here. They have a good club, and their team is tough. But, I love this, but it was so hard to think about playing for them because I've spent my whole career game planning against them and trying to beat them. So I like that last quote.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, can't play for them. They're rivals.
I mean, that makes sense. Now, the number was really the big issue. It's $10 million less per year.
Yeah, so apparently, according to Kirstie Acker,
although it's one more year.
Yeah, the offer that the Rays made a year and a half ago was 10 years, $300 million, which is a great offer for Tampa and is stunning that the Rays offered that. But as we know, the Padres offered $400 million, the Giants offered $360 million, and they ended up signing for whatever the hell he signed with the Yankees. So he ends up signing a 9-year, $360 million.
Yeah.
And the Rays offered 10 years, $300 million.
Yeah, so $30 million versus $40 million that he got.
Now, can I boomer you for a second?
Go ahead.
What about the taxes?
I know. That's the issue. The state income tax is the difference. Now, the challenge is doing the math on that because it's only 81 games. 81 of those checks
that you're taxed on?
That you're, well, I guess because Texas is also and California. So all those games that were in no state income tax states, you played because you earn the money where you play.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So you end up having to file a ton of tax
returns. So it's 81 dates, right?
81 dates in Tampa and Florida, but there's probably more because they're in Texas and California.
Would that make up the difference?
Texas and Tennessee. And so,
do you think that would have made the difference in the contract offer?
No.
Like, did the Rays make a comparable offer to the Yankees?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think
what are the non-tax income states? It's Texas. It's
Florida,
and Tennessee is one, but there's no team.
Right, so it wouldn't even affect the matter.
I think it's just Texas and Florida.
You imagine if Aaron Judge signed with the Tampa Bay
plus
Rays?
Plus the 81 games in Florida.
Right.
I mean, I want to do the math in the next break. Well, I bet it's
I bet you it's close, right?
It's close.
9 years, 360 versus 10 years, 300. But I think it's one of those things where, and we've talked about this with the Mets actually in the past, that if you're going to steal somebody, mm-hmm. if you're going to get someone to leave an iconic franchise and you're not an iconic franchise, you have to overpay. It's actually similar to something you said yesterday about Lindor,
yeah.
where, yeah, that contract was worth it. I mean, you got to get him to stay. You got to show that you're different. You got to show that this is a new era in Mets baseball.
By the way,
so I think in the case, that's what Tampa would have had to have done to have stolen Judge.
By the way, you were right on Lindor. Just saying.
Oh, yes. Now, here's the
dog.
Here's the real question. All right. I have been, and I wouldn't say like it's a compliment. I'm certainly not complimenting myself. I have been very patient with this Yankee struggle because I know baseball and I know how this goes. I know that there's ups and that there's downs.
Yep.
But even I, as patient as I'm trying to be, it's tough. When you look at yesterday's game, and they get a run in the first inning, and Alex Verdugo's playing soccer with the baseball in the bottom of the first inning, and Carlos Rodon is melting down, and the Yankee offense does nothing outside of Ben Rice, and they lose again. And the Yankees are now on a stretch in which they have played the worst baseball over a 22-game stretch, more so than any other team in baseball, which is amazing. Like, there is no 22-game stretch from any other team in baseball this year that is worse than the way the Yankees are playing. 23-game stretch, let me correct myself. There comes a point where even I, as someone who's trying to say, ah, it's baseball, you got to be patient, where I'm starting to say, oh my God, do they just suck?
No, they don't suck because they're too good to suck, talent-wise. We had this conversation a bit yesterday. But to me, it's when do you get worried? So when Boston, who they have two more games against, when Boston...
Two more series against
yeah. us. When Boston catches them, that's when you're worried.
Boy, you're patient. When Boston catches them?
I am. Because to me, this is all about the postseason. This is all about getting to the second season. And so when Boston, who is the team that's right there in with the third wild card, catches and passes them, the Royals, I don't know if they're good enough. I think they fall back, but... When Boston catches and passes them, and all of a sudden the Yankees are the third team out of the division in the playoff conversation, that's when you're worried.
Wow. So you're waiting for them to fall. Right now they're up 5.5 games on a playoff spot.
Yes.
Tiki's saying, give it a few more weeks of stinking. They have to fall
stink. No, 3.5, right?
Well, no, over the third wild card spot.
Right.
Over
right.
just being a playoff team, they're up 5.5 games on Kansas City and 7 games on the Houston Astros.
Right.
Every day that goes by, every game that goes by, when they lose like that, it's a little bit of a dent into my armor of it's baseball and it's a long season.
Yep.
So my worry meter today, it's gaining a little bit of steam. Now, I think they're going to turn things around because they're too good to continue to play like this.
Yeah.
But what's troublesome is they do so many small things that causes them to lose. Like Alex Verdugo has played a Gold Glove left field. He's been amazing in left field. And he's kicking a ball in the left field corner. So these little mistakes are starting to add up. But last night, to me, it was another piece of evidence that Carlos Rodon just can't pitch in New York City. Toll-free number is 888-801-1019. Let's go to Woody in Plattsburgh to lead it off today. What's up, Woody?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up, Woody?
Kiki, welcome back from the Emerald Isle.
Thank you. It was beautiful.
I know it was. I've been there a few times myself. I had heard callers giving you recommendations, so I wasn't going to do that. So instead, I'm just going to tell you what you missed.
I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to mix it up. If you went at the end of the month, you could have went to the Galway races, which are big fun. I don't know if you do any horse, you know, watch any horse racing.
Yeah,
whatever,
horse racing really has never really been my thing. We were watching Gaelic hurling. It was Kilkenny versus Clare, and it was an unbelievable match and a comeback by Clare, and I was really into it. Now maybe it was because I had 3 or 4 Guinnesses in me, but I mean, we had a good time sitting in the pub. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Right, well, I'm glad you had a good time. It's a beautiful country, and Galway. I have people in Galway and in the north in Derry. Great country.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, let me get to the Yankees. Two things. I'll tell you how disgusted I am, and then I'll tell you about Rodon. Ev, like you, you know I'm not a casual. I mean, I'm not in the bathroom at Citi Field scoring games.
Fair enough.
But I'm not a casual.
Right.
And I take in a lot of content. So I like to think that I'm pretty well informed on my team. So, you know, the last few weeks have been extremely brutal. What I do is, as soon as they go down, I shut the TV off and I just leave the radio broadcast on and I monitor the game. And immediately, all the stress that I was feeling just leaves my body. So that's how bad it's gotten for me. Now, here's the thing for Rodon. I think to say that it's pressure, it's the lazy answer. It's not pressure. It's the pitch sequence choices.
Right.
I watched the post game last night, and it seemed like maybe a little light went on in his head. Now, you got to remember, he's a starting pitcher, definitely an alpha-type personality. And he would like to think that, hey, I can throw my fastball in the first inning a gazillion times, and I'm going to throw it right by guys because I can. Well, sorry, bro. When you're, you know, like a regular pitcher, when they come out and they start, you only see like one or two of their pitches.
Right.
And with Rodon, the problem is those one or two pitches seems to be the fastball. And if dudes sit on that, they're going to smash it.
You,
so then he realizes.
You may be.
I'm right there.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm right there. So then last night in the interview, he's like, you know, when we started mixing everything up in the second inning, like things started, you know, to like loosen up for me. And he was like, I'm throwing too many fastballs and I have to open up my whole repertoire right off the rip so they're not hunting my fastball. So I think maybe there's some progress. Listen, dude, it's not the pressure. He's just frustrated. He's a competitor. Right. That's what it is.
Right, he's making bad decisions. Woody, you're right. He's making bad decisions in the moment. Now, I wish I was paying attention enough to see if he was shaking things off. You know what I mean? Mm. It's hard to know, but like I wonder if he was, no, I'm not throwing the cutter here. No, I'm not throwing a changeup here. Hey, give me the fastball. Like, and sometimes when you're struggling, as he has been these last five starts, you tend to just want to throw what you think you're best at.
Right.
And that's his fastball.
But it seems like in these last five starts where he has at some point settled down, it all happens once the horse is out of the barn, if you will.
That's because he probably starts listening.
Listening to what?
The catcher, right? His pitching coach, Matt Blake.
So he's hard-headed in the first inning.
Yes, because he thinks it's... I'm a power pitcher. I'm just blowing about bodies. And by the way, in some moments, especially what was it, the fourth inning, he did that.
He finished the game fine. The problem was by the time he was done in the fourth inning, his pitch count was 95, so yes. He was done. Aaron Boone said something after the game that he's open to getting creative and how to solve Rodon's problems early, and that they're gonna kind of study and look more at what's been kind of struggling for him. And get, quote, creative on how to solve the first inning trouble.
We're leaning into kicking ass.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means let's use an opener and have Carlos pitch the second or third inning.
Can you imagine?
By the way, I never thought that that would work because then his first inning is the third inning.
Yeah.
So how would that even solve his issues?
Think about how demeaning that is to him.
Well,
I mean, he fashions himself as a top-line starter.
You know what's more demeaning?
Major League Baseball.
You know what's more demeaning? An ERA near 5.
Yeah.
An ERA that is over 10 in his last 5 starts. That's the most demeaning thing one can have.
True.
Let's go to Ray in Brooklyn. What's up, Ray?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Can you guys hear me? I'm at work. Yep. I work for the post office, so I'm trying to lay low.
Yep, we got you.
Awesome. So listen, before I get to my Yankees points, I want to preface by saying this. Nobody asked me or prompted me to do this. But between the 14th and the 21st, I want to give props and a shout out to WFAN because they're going to have Big Al Cintron, New York's very own, you know, honorary Theo, doing the overnight for that week. And with, you know, and if you listen, then you're gonna get a great treat. If you don't, it's your loss.
That's right.
And he also represents, you know, inclusivity and diversity, you know, in broadcasting. So that's a big
And here's
deal.
The trick, right?
Respect to that.
Here's the trick now. Yeah. If you are not up in the overnight, much like I've done with Al, I think it was this past Saturday, and I've certainly done with Big Mac.
Your ass is up.
he wakes my ass up. There's a rewind button on the Odyssey app. It's one of those beautiful things about the technology we have.
Right.
So even if you miss it, click, rewind, you're good to go. But we do love Al.
Absolutely. But he also goes by the model, wake your asses up, so you might want to adhere to that also.
That's how he starts every show. And guess what? He wakes my ass up.
All right.
Yeah, last thing on that. It's going to be fantastic radio. Good job by WFAN. You know, and I appreciate the inclusivity and the diversity. All right, on to the Yankees. Evan, I called a few days ago or last week, and I agreed with you. I one of those Yankee fans that are kind of calm, mm-hmm. and you know, but now I think I'm feeling a little bit like you, where I'm wavering a little bit, only because, let me tell you why. I do agree with you. I don't think Rodon is built for New York. Best case scenario, he's a front runner. If he gets off to a good start in the game, he's going to have a good start. Mm. So I don't know if it's like so much New York. It may have something to do with it, but I think he's also a front runner. It's a combination of the two. And he is, you know, Kenny Rogers. He is Burnett, Javi Vasquez, and anybody else you can throw into that pot reincarnated.
But by the way, he just named a lot of names.
Yeah.
And this is, I just want to show you that I differ on this. Some of the names he just said, I completely agree, can't handle New York. Javier Vasquez couldn't handle New York. I can't tell you why, but watching him in his two times here, that's one of those guys. Stick him in Montreal. Yeah. Stick him in Atlanta. He's fine. I agree with you.
You hear the voices. That's why.
I hear voices in my head. They speak to me. Da, 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 da.
They talk to me.
They talk to me.
What in the hell are you two talking about?
We're singing
about
a song.
The Viper, the Legend Killer, Randy Orton. That's
you,
his theme song.
You provoked a song because you said, I hear the voices in my head. So he started singing. AJ Burnett, I don't believe that. I think people forget how important AJ Burnett was during that run in 2009. So I don't buy it with AJ. I buy it with Javi Vasquez. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what other names he said. The I can handle New York guys and not. Who else did he say? Oh, Sonny Gray? I don't buy. We've mm-hmm. talked about that.
Yeah. Carl Pavano was not on that list, but I think you could probably put him on that list.
All right, you guys ready for a Carl Pavano stat that's going to make you sick? So Carl Pavano is known for two things around here. He's known for never being healthy. He actually has an MRI tube named after him. It's called the Carl Pavano Memorial MRI tube. But he's also known for being really bad when he pitched, right? Carlos Rodon, who's already made more starts than Carl Pavano, give him credit for that, has a worse ERA as a New York Yankee than Carl Pavano. How about that?
That's this year or that's overall?
That's his Yankee career.
Oh, wow. Isn't that amazing?
Not in a good way.
So
not amazing in a good way.
No, in a bad way. Let's go to David in Manhattan. How's it going, David?
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
First off, I want to say I am not a Yankee fan.
Okay.
I'm a Met fan, and I'm glad to learn from you, Evan, and Rico Bronyas. I like them a lot.
Appreciate
it. And so thank you for that and your knowledge.
Thank you.
But I wanted to I called for I don't believe that Rodon. It's Rodon's problem that he's pitching in New York. I think it's a problem that he's not a good pitcher. And you look at his stats, and I did just briefly, but 7 years in Chicago, he had one good year. He had one good year in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Two good years.
Okay.
And I think it's a matter of Cashman, you know, not really evaluating. Well,
so let me disagree with you about one thing, okay? If you look at, and this is what I thought when he was a free agent a year and a half ago, the Mets were very hot for Carlos Rodon,
mm-hmm.
and obviously the Yankees ended up getting him. I looked at him and said, if you look at his career, the biggest fear I have is health.
Yeah.
When he's healthy, he's good. Sometimes great, like he was in 22 and 21, but those other years you're talking about with Chicago, when he was healthy, which was rare, he was an average, adequate starting pitcher. But that was as a 23-year-old. Once he started to show health in 2021 and in 2022, he was awesome when he pitched.
Mm.
And so I disagree with that assessment that, well, he's just not good.
Yeah.
I don't think his track record shows that. His track record showed a guy that was unreliable to stay healthy.
Yeah, and those two back-to-back seasons, obviously contract years, both of them, with Chicago and with the White Sox and with San Francisco, he was healthy.
Exactly.
And so when we first got, he wasn't healthy when he got here.
And I give him that. It happens. It was a known risk.
And he was... Sean wanted to boo him.
Yes.
Right? The one good game he pitched, the Subway Series that we were at.
Yes.
He wanted to boo him.
I remember.
Right. That was the only game that I think last year that you felt comfortable with him health-wise. But coming into this season, it felt health was not an issue. And so you expected what you saw back in 2021 and what you saw in 2022. But now this isn't a health thing. At least I don't think it is. Because he's still rearing back and he's hitting high 90s.
From what we know, it is not a health
thing. It's not a... To me, this is a... This, as Woody said, it's a sequencing thing. It is a, You got to pitch smart. You can't just blow people away.
But it goes to our last caller's point that I disagree on, to just say, well, he's not that good. And that's the issue right now. He was never this bad throughout his major league career.
He can be good. That's the difference.
Yeah.
There's certain guys who are just bad, and they're just bad. Carlos Rodon is not bad. He's just not playing well right now.
No, I always thought when they signed him, the risk that they had was health.
Yes.
And when he missed a bunch of time in 2023, I think a lot of us said, well, gee, you should have known. That's the risk you had when you signed a guy that has missed as much time as he missed. And when he came back and he pitched to a 7 ERA, you could even say the same thing. Hey, he's not healthy. And I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
I was willing to say, look, last year was bad. It was his first year here. He wasn't healthy. Fingers crossed he's healthy. This year he has been healthy. He got off to a really good start, and like I documented, it felt like as soon as the pressure got high by going to Fenway Park for a game against the Red Sox, and all of a sudden the Yankees started losing, which adds to the pressure, he's completely crumbled.
Right.
And now we're talking about a guy with an ERA of 4.63. He has never had that high of an ERA in any kind of full season. Like, never, other than brief moments, like when he barely pitched in 2020 or 2019, which can't even count, because it wasn't a full season.
Right.
This is the worst he's ever pitched. And that's why I look at him and say, why? And to me, he reeks of a guy that just can't handle it. Let's go to Anthony in Staten Island. How you doing, Anthony? What's up, Anthony? Anthony going once. Anthony going twice. Anthony's gone. So instead, we go to Julio out in Queens. What's up, Julio?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good.
First time calling. I'm big fan of you guys.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it.
All right. Great. So, what I want to say is I'm a huge Yankees fan. I've been to probably like 8-9 games right this year, right?
Nice.
I love the Yankees. But, you know, coming into the season, I wasn't, you know, had high expectations. I'm like, yeah, we had Juan Soto, we had Verdugo, and I was like, but for the most part, the team is the same. So when they started out on a hot start, I was like surprised. I was riding the wave, and now I'm kind of glad that the team is not doing that great, because now it kind of puts like a spark under Cashman. You know, hey, let's do something with the team, because that's what, like, if the team did all right this year and maybe made it to the second round of playoffs, whatever, no, they were not going to do anything next year or not make any big changes.
Well, hold on. Stop right there, because I want to ask you a further question about that. So you, and I've heard this before from Yankee fans in the past, which is, hey, I'm glad they're not playing well because this is going to force Brian Cashman to do whatever it is.
Yeah, and unlike 2022, which we talked about yesterday, which was after the All-Star break when they started playing, he can still do something.
Yeah, there is time. Are you talking about the trade deadline, though? Is that what you're saying? Like, hey, I'm glad they're struggling because now it motivates Brian Cashman to make a big move at the deadline?
I'm kind of thinking about a trade deadline, but we have seen this in the past. Like, oh, yeah, this might, maybe Cashman might do something, but I don't have no faith that he's going to do anything in the trade deadline or offseason. So I don't even know what I'm expecting now. I'm just here to
get it out. I've got Julio more depressed somehow.
Right. Well, I mean, it's I don't know if it's less than, if it's worse than despondency. Like you think it's done, or you're just clueless. Like you have no idea what the identity and the expectation is of the team every night. And it's funny because every night you turn on the game, you sit and watch it. Whether you go, as Julio's been 8 times, or you're sitting at your home watching, or you're just following it on your phone or whatever device, and like you're still hoping that you're going to get a semblance of what you saw a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
And it's not happening.
Well,
And you feel helpless. Like, as a fan, you feel helpless. Like, what can I do? And there is nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do other than hope things change. I heard Keith say this last night. I was driving back from the Met game, and I love hearing Keith's perspective on this as a diehard Yankee fan. And he made a comment, I guess, on social media last night, hey, go Cubs, because the Cubs beat the Orioles, which is so up my alley. That's what I do. I always look at the standings and the scoreboards, and you care. And Keith said someone responded to him, why do you even care about the Orioles and the Cubs? We suck. And Keith's answer was, we're 3 games out of the American League East.
Right.
Yes, we suck. Yes, things are bad, but they're still in it.
Yeah,
of course. That's the reality. Like, that's not to make anybody...
That's a long-ass season.
It's not to make anyone feel that much better, but it's the reality of, as bad as things are, and they are bad, the Yankees are still there. Now, I know that sounds like something Aaron Boone would say, which is, it's all right in front of us. But he's right.
No, he is right.
It is all right in front of you.
And again, the Orioles are good. Are they fallible? Sure. Can they be beat? Sure. Right? They're still young. There's still the prospect of the Yankees getting back right and then jumping back over them. So they're not 8 games out of first place in the division. They're also still in the wild card conversation. But it's getting precipitously close. to being worrisome.
Yeah, so
like, if they fall out of being locked into the postseason, that's when you're really panicking. And I think the team panics. I think, obviously, the fan base would far have started panicking by that point. But this is where Brian Cashman really is going to be tasked with calming that, right? Because once it starts panic inside the organization because you've fallen out of the wild card situation, then that's when it becomes, that's when Brian Cashman really has to work.
Yeah.
Right? And he probably should be doing this already and thinking about it, and I'm sure he is, but nobody has faith in him. That's the problem. Nobody has faith in that Cashman's going to do anything.
No, I get you. And look, the Orioles, ever since they won that series against the Yankees, they responded by losing five in a row.
They're just not scared of them.
Well,
they're not scared of the Yankees, but they're not great.
No, they've responded to that series win by playing 500 baseball, mm-hmm. which has allowed the Yankees, despite this horrible stretch, to not bury themselves. But I do issue a warning, and that warning is right now they're still in the AL East race. You know, Keith is right to pay attention to Cubs Orioles because you win tonight, they lose tonight, you're two games out. But the warning is this weekend because they do play the Orioles going into the All-Star break. And that's a danger zone.
Yep.
If this doesn't turn around soon and this continues to get bad and it's bad in Baltimore against the Orioles, they will bury themselves from the American League East. Like, that's on the table. And they haven't done it yet, which is amazing. At 6-17, you would think they've done that. They have not done that. But they can do that. These three games coming up against Baltimore are monumental. They're really, really important. Just like these last two games against Tampa Bay are. I know it's the middle of July and it's weird to think that games are big, but they got to stop the freaking bleeding.
Yeah.
Because you also wonder, and you tell me if this happens, when things start to get worse and every night you're finding new ways to lose, does it start to become a mental thing where you come into the ballpark expecting to lose?
Well, it's not. I don't know if you're expecting to lose because baseball is not... It doesn't present itself as one of these, we have to throw it all on the line right now, otherwise we put ourselves so far behind the eight ball that we can't. It's a grind. It's an everyday thing. You come in, you try to be your best self every night. And, you know, at some point, you have to take personal responsibility. And I mean, we're talking about Carlos Rodon right now, but, I mean, Juan Soto, who was the catalyst for everything at the beginning of the season, is hitting 140, 150-something in July. Right, I mean, he hasn't been the Juan Soto that we thought we were getting. Now everybody's entitled to some sort of slump throughout the season. And do I believe this is Juan's? No, I don't. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to turn it around. But man, it would give us a lot more comfort if Juan Soto was Juan Soto right now.
Yes, you're 100% right. And that's what happens when you're overly reliant on two players. If one of those players, or dare I say, both of those players, start to slump, it becomes very difficult to overcome. Matt in Forked River, what's up, Matt?
Hey, guys. First time, long time.
Been awesome.
Listening to the station since the inception.
Awesome. You guys, appreciate great. You, man. Thank you.
I want to talk about Carlos Rodon, though. I mean, his problem started when they implemented the pitch clock. You know, he hasn't been the same pitcher before the pitch clock. I think that could have something to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's recovery. Like, you can't rear back. Because, again, he wants to throw the fastball. I think his percentage last year was like 60%. I mean, it was ridiculous how often he threw his fastball.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't a ton of movement. That was probably an injury issue. But the pitch clock forces you to pitch before you're fully recovered.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like you're not getting time to, all right, I can just pump 98 here. Just do it over and over and over and over again. There's going to be some movement and you have no shot. Now you get winded. Now, how that happens in the first inning, I have no idea.
Well, that's why it doesn't work. That's right. Why the point isn't really backed up by much. Like, whenever people do this, and I understand why our caller's doing it, right? You're looking for answers. Just like I'm saying, hey, I don't think the guy can pitch here. Every time someone has brought up the pitch clock as a reason why a pitcher struggles, there's a stat I like to look at. And you can tell me this stat means nothing.
Go ahead.
But I'm going to give it to you. In the final year before the pitch clock, there on Baseball Savant, calculated each pitcher's time that it took before they threw home, just to get an idea of like who's a fast worker or not. So, for example, I knew going into the pitch clock, boy, Edwin Diaz is not going to be affected. He was one of the fastest working pitchers in all of baseball. And so my assumption was, well, that shouldn't be a problem, right?
Yes.
So I looked up guys when people say the pitch clock is affecting them, and I see, well, where did they rank before there was a pitch clock? So I have the answer on Carlos Rodon, and you can tell me what it means. He was a middle-of-the-pack pitcher.
Yeah, so it's not that big of a deal.
It shouldn't be a big deal.
No, but there is something to the fact that he can't get the spin rate on his fastballs like he used to. So I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you want to say it's sticky stuff.
I think it is the sticky stuff. I've asked. I wrote my friends over at Major League Baseball. Was there a directive sent to teams that said we're cracking down or be aware of this for whatever reason? The answer was no. But all of a sudden, the Yankees have no control. And that's, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And so I don't want to make excuses like Carlos Rodon can't pitch in New York, or
that's not an excuse,
or it's too damn hot outside, or whatever the heck the situation is.
That's my excuse.
I want to blame it on something tangible, and I can't find it. And nobody can. And especially Aaron Boone can't. And that's the biggest problem of all.
There is something, though, the Yankees do have control over. So Carlos Rodon was great in his 1 year in San Francisco. What did he have in San Francisco?
A beard.
This is not the Navy.
Oh, come on.
No, come on. Yeah, I know he can go with the mustache. It's in the Nazi killing business. Just let these guys grow a beard out. Let them be comfortable. You talk about being in New York. Stop with this nonsense.
What do you think that's going to do? Let
you know what?
Make him look more like a badass so he's intimidating standing on the mound at, what is he, 6'5", 250, whatever the heck he is. Right, he's just going to look more intimidating.
But, Teak, you played. There were guys that were in a rhythm, whether they wore the same socks or they had earrings. Okay, but if you take that away from them, you could take away their rhythm, their confidence.
There's a reason
Is the future of the station.
Right.
There's a reason why Loogie feels this way.
Go ahead.
Can I share this with everybody? Are you okay with this?
Well, I don't know what you're going to share, so I'll judge it after.
I'm going to share a piece of audio. I'm going to share a piece of, and I want to make this very clear before we play it. This is fake doctored audio, okay? This is AI. Very scary. It is a fake Carlos Rodon talking after the game last night. And I came across this because and I give the guy on Twitter a lot of credit. The guy's name is Immortal, all right? That's the guy's immortal. Name on Twitter. Immortal.
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 Got it.
So Immortal, if you're out there, you made me laugh, all right? And again, I want to preface this. This is not really Carlos Rodon.
This is fake.
This is fake, but it sounds just like him, and it's kind of funny. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's fake AI. I got it. Here's bad Carlos.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, at least I didn't cry this time, right? So that's an improvement. But truthfully, I had a bean burrito last night, and that kind of messed with my stomach. And then you got Gerrit Cole in between innings telling me what to do, what not to do. And, you know, it just kind of messed with my flutter since he came back. And to be honest with you, me not having a beard since I've been a Yankee has really messed with me. You know, I just feel more masculine when I have my beard like I get with the White Sox and the Giants. So hopefully we could figure that out. I'll talk to Cashman since he's in Tampa. Get the beard back, mustached into work. But I've come in shape this year. I was on a roll. I had that Royals circle on my calendar. I did good there.
Right, ever since that game, I don't know.
That's impressive.
So, again, that's not real. I make that very clear. Please don't run with that. All right. Carlos Rodon did not say that he has stomach ache. He did not say that he wants his beard back, though he probably thinks it. He did not blame Gerrit Cole for being distracted. I think that part's my favorite.
That is. Because it kind of lines up.
Gerrit Cole keeps walking around. He's distracted.
At least I didn't cry this time, right?
I didn't cry this time. So that is what's scary about our world.
AI is ridiculous.
Because that could be presented as like really Carlos, and that is not really Carlos. Mm. But what I think Loogie did, and I understand because I kind of think the same way with him on this, he kind of misses the beard. Mm. Like, what's the problem?
He misses his sense of comfort.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, Dean. Mm.
He's hiding behind the beard. When he's behind the beard, it's a facade. So he can be somebody else.
Oh, stop it.
Badass.
If you were on a football team, let's say the Giants let you go, mm-hmm. and you signed with the Oakland Raiders, mm-hmm. right?
The then Oakland Raiders.
That's right. And the Raiders say to you, and they give you a great contract, you're happy, you're like, I'm so happy to be here, Oakland, the black hole, this is amazing. And they're like, oh, by the way, we have a rule. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to be bald. Not allowed. You have to grow your hair out.
Oh.
And you're like, well, I'm not really comfortable with that. I haven't done that since I was 18. And they say, too bad. Mark Davis is like, I'm sorry. Do you see my hair? Mm. You have to have hair, too. Mm. And you're like, listen, I'm a Raider.
Yeah.
It's just hair, kind of like it's just facial hair. I'm going to grow it out. You don't think that would bother you?
I'd say, is this contract guaranteed? I will George Jefferson the hell out of my head.
Me not having a beard has really messed with me.
I would look like a fool for guaranteed money.
That's funny. I do wonder if Carlos Rodon just went up to Hal Steinbrenner Tampa.
Yeah.
And just said, Hal, hey, how's it going? Hal's like, what's up? And he's like, look, I got to ask you a question. I've been struggling. And Hal's like, yeah, no kidding. And he says, I think it would help if you allowed me to grow my beard back. What would Hal say to him? Would Hal be just like, we don't do that around here?
I think he would just flat out say no. One word answer. No.
No.
Hopefully we could figure that out. I'll talk to Cashman since he's in Tampa.
No.
No. Not happening.
And what if he just did it?
Oh, he'd get fined, wouldn't he?
Okay, but who cares?
That's true.
You know what you need to do? Aaron Judge needs to grow a beard. They're not fining him.
No, they're not.
Juan Soto could grow a beard. They're not fining him, right? I get yelled at. You know who doesn't get yelled at? Tiki. So I'll do something wrong with Tiki because I'm not going to get yelled at.
It's a good point. More of your calls coming up, 888-808-1019. And something happened that I still can't believe happened. We all got to hear a phone conversation between Joe Shane and Saquon Barkley. If you didn't hear it, you're going to hear it next, and we're going to analyze. Evan and Tiki here on The Fan.